Well, good noon. Good afternoon, immediately afternoon to everybody. And I'm using a little different chronometer here in the hope that it will work. And we are at A Treatise on White Magic. We're at commentary number four, but what I want to call it really is 7.4, because it is rule seven, and this was rule three. This was rule 7.3. So, however many programs there may be for these rules, I hope to just number them by 7.1, 7.2, 7.3, and so forth. This is then 7.4. Okay, and moving right along. Okay, so we are at a place where a second subject is being taken up, and it is called the two paths. Now let's see, what was the subject which we had immediately before? The battleground of the astral plane. All right, I think we have a clear enough idea of the kind of conflict that we all necessarily face as we are moving towards the second initiation, oftentimes under Scorpio with strong Mars and Pluto, and how we bring eventually a degree of tranquility into that situation using the planets Venus, Jupiter, and Neptune. All right, so this is the two paths that are going to face the solar angel. At least they're going to face the one who meditates, and from a superior perspective, they will face the solar angel as well. Although the solar angel has long ago decided what is the superior path, and is far, far beyond the human, excuse me, far, far beyond the human stage. Pardon me. So, passing from our consideration of the nature of the astral plane, we will deal with its functions and relate and the relation of the disciple to its activities. In other words, it is a plane of dual forces. It's a plane of conflict. It's a plane that follows either the higher or the lower of the pairs of opposites, or perhaps remains that one dealing with this plane can remain somewhat neutral for a long time. And we want to follow, adhere to, through aspiration, the higher of the pairs of opposites, which will lift us in terms of our relationship with the angel of the presence and the solar angel, and eventually our own presence, the monad. Let us remember certain things about this plane. First, it is preeminently a battleground, and on it is fought the warfare which eventuates in the final release of the imprisoned soul. Now, who is and what is this imprisoned soul? This is the soul in incarnation. It is an aspect of consciousness which has been put down, captivated, remains in the presence of the lower vehicles, and is in a way encapsulated by these lower vehicles. It is useful to have in mind the outstanding characteristics of the three planes and the three bodies which function on them. So here a little review. The physical plane is the plane of active experience in and through matter, and let's call it dense matter, as there are on the cosmic physical plane all kinds of matter of ever attenuating degree. So, you know, even on the cosmic ethers, we have a species, a type of matter that we haven't been able to analyze yet, but it is material, and it's, according to occult chemistry, it's consisting of different aggregations of the bubbles, bubbles in the koilon. We don't know to what extent the cosmic, astral, cosmic, mental are material, but maybe there's only one immaterial substance in all of cosmos, excuse me, and that would be absoluteness itself. So this physical plane, it is the plane of externalization, and according to the condition and point of development of the inner man, so will be the outer form and its activities. Okay, let's see if we can make that work. It's always telling me that I have to save, and I'm never quite sure whether I've managed to save, but apparently so. I've worked out a new system. Hopefully it will work. All right, so it is the plane of externalization. Maybe not entirely the lowest plane. Maybe there is a plane number 8 in a way that is even more dense and through which we pass through all the time. Is that still lesser plane related to the 8th sphere? Well, the 8th sphere has been discussed in various ways, either as the concretization of the lower mental plane, which is considered to be disastrous for the evolving human unit, or as Madame Blavatsky describes it, a kind of a dust bin, and maybe material to such a degree that what we deal with can pass right through it, the types of matter that we normally consider the lowest. Always the more attenuated matter can pass through the less attenuated matter. So the plane of externalization, and according to the condition or point of development of the inner man, so will be the outer form and its activities. We are talking here about the degree of refinement and about the process of transmutation, which is the elevation of matter to a higher frequency and the ejection of matter of lower vibration. So it's a refinement. Then the astral plane, of course, we've been dealing with extensively here. It is the plane whereon the man passes through three stages of consciousness. Actually, DK has told us at some point that there is no such thing as etheric consciousness. Well, there certainly is cosmic etheric consciousness, because we speak about buddhic awareness, apneic awareness, monadic, and logoic, and those are ethers, cosmic ethers. We also can become aware of the condition of radiation on the etheric plane. So, you know, it's hard to know exactly what he means by there is no consciousness per se. Maybe it's not sort of an independent vehicle, independent of the physical plane, because the ethers are considered physical. Anyway, the man is passing through three straight stages of consciousness. You know, I've read this book frequently and from long ago, but it always seems like something new is being noticed, staring me in the face, something I hadn't looked at before. So with great profit, we can read and reread the books of the Tibetan and, of course, the Secret Doctrine and some other theosophical works that perhaps are not too devotional. So he gained, through his sensory apparatus, consciousness in the world of forms, and develops the ability to react to these forms with wisdom and intelligence. And this is the normal sensory apparatus. Now, we know from this, let's see if I can find it. Here it is. We know from this grouping of senses that Keith Bailey put together that there are many, many senses, higher extensions of the senses. So we have to discriminate, as DK talking strictly about the physical senses, those which apply to the dense physical level and maybe to a certain extent to the etheric levels. Although it's rather interesting, you know, we're not, are we given here really, clear audience? Yeah, we're not given the senses for the lower two planes, subplanes of the astral plane, where about which or in relation to which DK says we have nothing to do, the seventh plane being the hell of the average believer, and the sixth plane not much better, sixth subplane. And he doesn't really correlate any senses with the liquid and the very dense subplanes of the systemic or solar physical plane, physical etheric plane. So there are certain areas in this map where we just cannot go. We cannot relate. We cannot relate to the higher two subplanes of the Buddhic and Atmic levels, but only on the mental plane are all seven of the subplanes correlated with one of the powers or the cities. Anyway, so this type of consciousness, which relates to the lower levels, the physical level, is shared with the animals, and shared with the animals. And then there is the factor of sensitivity, or the awareness of moods, emotions and feelings, desires and aspirations. And this is, I've just gone a little too far. Excuse me while I try to get back to where I was. Okay. Yes. So what we're looking at here, the three stages of consciousness. So there is a kind of consciousness, and the senses, even though the senses are, in a sense, located on the dense physical plane, the dense physical senses, the sensitivity associated with it is connected with the astral plane. So there is now a kind of sensitivity to what is going on within the astral body itself. Sensitivity or awareness of moods, emotions and feelings, desires and aspirations which have their roots within the disciple or the human being, have their roots within him in the principle of self-consciousness or in the Ahamkara principle. Now that self-consciousness can go up a long way, and we can think of ourselves in more and more inclusive terms. So we are not necessarily limited with Ahamkara to thinking of ourselves simply as a physical vehicle or an emotional vehicle or a personality. The Ahamkara principle can be extended to the sense of ourselves as a consciousness within the egoic lotus. Or in the Ahamkara principle, as the occultist who loves difficult phrases and thereby, I think, obstructs his way so often, is apt to call it. This he shares in common with his fellow man. So the astral plane, you know, three stages of consciousness, consciousness of the world of forms. Let me just put that in there. Sensitivity to what is actually occurring within the astral body itself, and what else? Okay, spiritual awareness or sensitiveness to the spiritual world. Now, when you start using the word spiritual, we can maybe include the soul on the higher mental plane. At the same time, the word spiritual can relate even more so to the spiritual triad, the spiritual or abstract mind, the spiritual kind of intuition or pure reason of the Buddhic plane, and the plane of spiritual will. That's also spiritual. Okay, let me just make sure that I can keep all of this intact. So, sensitive to the spirit, sensitivity to the spiritual world, and the feeling aspect of the higher consciousness. The feeling aspect of the higher consciousness. Now, that is a very interesting phrase, because there is a kind of touching of other energies. In other words, the energy within our energy system, even on high levels, touches other energies on those higher planes, and it is a kind of higher sentiency. A kind of higher sentiency. Okay. Okay, now it may be that I have managed to erase something here, and I'm quite sorry. I'm using a different chronometer, so I don't dare to stop it, you know. So sorry. So that maybe wastes a little bit of time, but not that I would like to. Okay, this has its roots in the soul, presupposes the dominance of the mental nature, and is that faculty which constitutes the mystic, who is always depending upon a higher type of sentiency. Okay, so presupposes the dominance of the mental nature, and is that faculty the feeling faculty, spiritual sensitivity to the spiritual world, and this is also involving the astral plane. The mystic is a very, under Neptune, a very feeling type of person, and Masamori is always talking about the feelings of the heart. It's not that we must do away with the factor of feeling, because it can help us to assess the nature, the quality of that which is contacted. Okay, so spiritual awareness or sensitiveness to the spiritual world. So, world of form, the astral world itself, and a kind of sensitivity to higher worlds which the mystic possesses. Let's see. Whoop. I think I have to be very careful lest I erase something that's supposed to be here. The mystic has a higher type of sensitivity. So this awareness he shares in common with all disciples, you know, who are, let's just say, these disciples are oriented towards the soul and are feeling the energy of the soul in their consciousness. And it is the reward of gained victories of his astral plane experience. And immediately we think of Scorpio and the warrior nature, which is meant to triumph over lower energies. Okay, so we've been looking here at various planes. The physical plane is the first one discussed. So we're looking here, I think I'll just put it in, outstanding characteristics. Of the planes of the personality. Okay, the three planes in which the three personality vehicles function. So, the plane of externalization, the plane of, what can we call it, this astral plane? The plane of various types of sentiency. Okay. So a kind of sensitivity, let's call it a sensitivity to the world of forms. No. Doesn't give me that. What I really want, but I'm going to take it anyway, world of forms. Okay. And here, I think we can simply go this way, world of form, the singular. Okay. Now we go to the mental plane. He wants to outline this for us. The mental plane comes next. It is in it the right use of the intellect is the outstanding achievement. This involves the factors of reason and logic. Okay, and you know, it's not the intuitive method of determining what is correct or reaching the light, which is a direct knowledge, as Master Moria discusses it, but it is a kind of piecing together of the information and seeing the direction towards which the given information points, looking for coherence and avoiding, when possible, contradiction. When contradiction arises and we cannot seem to rid ourselves of it, we have the factor of paradox. Okay, so also three stages of development, and here I'll do something similar, and I'll put down of development. Okay. Well, you know, we're being meticulous, as I've often said, really Master D.K. told us, that on page 518 of Discipleship 2, we have the three types of second-ray souls. There are more, probably one for each of the seven sub-rays, but he's given us 1, 2, and 3, and the particular method that he often works with is called meticulous entirety. And so the detail of the sensed whole is seen in purely reasonable relation. And he gives us many of the pieces of the great jigsaw puzzle, and it's up to us to put together in a way that does not contradict the archetype we are beginning to sense. All the rest of the pieces. Okay, so we have the first one, the three stages of the mind. The stage wherein the mind is the receiver of impressions from the outer world via the five senses and the brain. Now, this is ordinary, and I guess he would say, shared with the animals. This is a negative condition, and in it, the quote, modifications of the thinking principle, let's just say that which Patanjali says that of which, potentially says we must rid ourselves. Okay, the modifications of the thinking principle are brought about through the impact of the external world and the reactions of the astral world. So we have to tune out the external world and also the many reactions to the external world, and perhaps also reactions to the mental world. You know, if you take a look at the ocean, the water, the lake, it can be quite whipped up by the wind, which we can look at as the symbol for the mental life. There are ways in which the mental life is symbolized by fire and sometimes by water. Oftentimes in astrology, it's more by, the mental life by fire or by air. Okay, that's an error, but fire or air, and the wind whips up the water. And fire, an intense mentality, burns away much dross. In astrology, the air signs oftentimes indicate mentality. And fire, perhaps more intuition. In occultism, there are various charts where it is the fire that indicates the lower mentality, and also other phases of a higher mentality, but air is representing the relational, intuitive world of mentality in astrology. And and the air petals of the egoic lotus are pretty much the petals of synthesis. So air is a factor of synthesis. So there's the receiving of impressions from the outer world, and then the stage regarding the mind, wherein the mind initiates its own activities, and wherein the intellect is the dominating factor. And this is common among those who are intelligent in the normal way. Sometimes the word intelligent, represents an intuitive response. And the race so far is not yet intuitive. Though thrown into activity by the factors enumerated above, it is responsive also to the thought currents of the mental plane as well. So this is a, do I want to try saving? Yes, I do. And I'm just hoping that works. It's giving me a lot of difficulty, but it seems to be working. So the mental currents can throw the mind into activity as well. Okay, let's get this correct. The mental currents throw the mind into activity also. Out of these, a third activity supervenes, wherein the reasoning principle acts upon the information gained in these two ways, either from lower aspects of the nature, and also perhaps simply from the external environment, and sets its own streams of thoughts and formulates its own thought forms, as well as registering those of others. So, from the external environment, from the etheric physical body, and from the astral body, and from the currents of the lower mind, impressions upon the mind, upon the mind are made. And reasoning deals with these impressions. Now, there's a big difference between reasoning and pure reason. Pure reason, like inclusive reason, is straight knowledge, and one does not need to go through linear cogitation. There is an immediate impression regarding the truth, and if it's really intuition, then, in fact, we are dealing with truth. When it comes to reasoning, we have the linear cogitation and the application of logic to the information given and trying to sense the direction that logic would have us go. It's a much slower process. It's very Saturnian. The direct knowledge factor belongs more to the two higher planets, Uranus, sudden realization, and Neptune as well, deep sensitive impression. Madame Blavatsky says at one point, Neptune is the god of reasoning. But I think we have to think of Neptune as related to the Buddhic plane and the plane of pure reason and not at all to logic, because in the Neptunian sign, let's say Pisces, Mercury, which at one point is essentially highly logical, experiences its fall. And so the usual capacity of Mercury is eliminated, or at least weakened, much weakened. And then later, not only from the outer world, not only from the personality, so this all is impression from within the personality. Finally, we have the stage wherein the soul, through concentration and meditation, succeeds in imposing its ideas and impressions upon the mind held steady in the light, so that the mental body responds to impressions emanating from the subjective or the spiritual world. Well, this is the highest source of impression given, but there are still higher possibilities, and Mercury is involved in all of these sources of impression. Mercury is one of those planets that relates to the concrete mind, or even simply to observation of concrete experience. It relates as well to logic and the normal reasoning process. It relates as well to intuition, where it is called the ruler of the transcendental mind, and I think there's some atmic connection as well, finally, where Mercury will, even through a very high type of discrimination, reveal the spirit. Okay, so, you know, we've seen three different planes and how they function. Seven in all, one mode for the physical plane, three modes for the astral and mental planes. Yet the battle par excellence, at least on our planet, which is not yet emotionally stable, or at least our planetary logos has not won the battle, which is achieved in his case at the cosmic second initiation. Yet the battle par excellence is fought out in the astral body and only reaches its most intense point and its potent fierceness when there is a good physical instrument and a well-equipped mentality. Okay. Well, you know, see that you battle, at one point, said Master DK. It was in the midst of the war, and people had fights within themselves and fights regarding the environment, and the whole world was at war. And those who knew something about occultism had to enter the fray and not seek refuge in what? Study, you know, meditation. I mean, these are all good things, necessary things. But it was possible to run away from the battle at that point. The greater the sensitivity of the astral body, the greater its reactions to the physical world and to the mental condition, and hence the fact emerges that disciples and the more highly evolved people of the world have a more potent astral body. So let's be aware of that. It doesn't mean it's out of control, it's just more potent and work under greater emotional strain than the less highly evolved and liberated, and the liberated sons of God. Disciples stand at the tortuous midway point. And it is sometimes thought that disciples do not have an intense emotional, emotional life. But here, Master DK contradicts this erroneous thought. So maybe everything becomes more intense as you become a disciple and harder to handle. The physical energy experiences, the emotional conflicts, the mental pressure, all of it intensifies, but still it has to be under control. It's not allowed to simply, this intensification is not allowed to run rampant. Students are therefore begged to deal drastically and potently with their emotional natures, for the waves that rise upon the stormy seas of life shut out the sun, engulf the swimmer, and render all plans futile. That's what happens if we don't deal very directly and potently with our emotional life. So students are therefore begged to deal drastically and potently with their emotional natures, and remember that victory descends from above and cannot be worked up from below. Remembering this. So our sustained higher alignment is the cause or the means of our victory over the emotional storms. I just saw a film the other day. It was about people who were making a crossing of the Pacific Ocean in a reasonable sized boat, but it was really a sailboat for two, and it had a motor at first. They ran into a hurricane. And, the scenes of what it was like during that hurricane, how they managed the filmmakers to portray that, truly awe-inspiring. Very frightening, I think, these huge, huge waves. It was very, I forget the name of the movie, I'm sorry, but it was based on a true story, and was a hurricane in 1983 or something like that, Hurricane Raymond, something of that nature. The man was swept overboard, and the woman with him suffered delusions of his presence for 40 days or some figure like that. And I suppose she just hallucinated him and he guided her. And maybe without that hallucination, who knows what it really was, she wouldn't have made it. But, when Mars and Neptune get together, it can be furious. When Jupiter and Neptune get together, the water can engulf you and the whale can swallow Jonah. If Mars, Jupiter, and Neptune were all to come together, it could mean the furious conditions of the waters. So Neptune is very beautiful and transcendental and Buddhic and all that, but if you really look at him in mythology, he's a very powerful figure. And yeah, I suppose he's associated with Indra, the Rajadeva lord of the Buddhic plane. And Indra is the storm god, among other things. And the air, the great winds, you know, come and whip up the waters. So we have to deal with that possible condition within our own lives, do what we can to correct such tendencies, really, before it's possible to take the second initiation. I guess the Chinese have a good saying, you know, never get angry except on purpose. So you don't want to lose control, but if you find that directed, powerful emotional energy can be useful, then it's all guided by the will, and it may be useful. So anyway, victory descends from above. We always have to make sure we're in alignment with regard to the hope for victory, aligned with the control centers in the vehicles of higher planes. It is interesting to note the occult sequence in the description given of this plane in the rule under consideration. Okay, this is rule 7, right? First of all, it is the plane of the dual forces. We are pulled or impelled in two directions, one leading into continued captivation by form, and the other leading to release into a higher, more widely permeating world that transcends our usual encapsulation by form. The first thing the aspirant becomes aware of is duality. The little evolved man is aware of synthesis, but it is the synthesis of the material nature. I mean, I think in the Garden of Eden, everything was just fine in terms of a perceived synthesis. It's a symbol for an early stage of consciousness, of material synthesis without being troubled by other higher aspects of the nature, which had to be eventually integrated. Then came the serpent in the tree, maybe a serpent of wisdom of a kind that pointed out a kind of opposition in man's nature. And man knew something about himself as an individualized being. And later the higher spiritual material synthesis is achieved, you know, Blavatsky's statement about matter, soul, and spirit all being the same, really, essentially the same. The highly spiritual man is aware also of synthesis, but it is that in his soul, whose consciousness is unity, and this soul can well be the spiritual triad. But in between, there's our wonderful word, which describes our state so often. But in between is the wretched aspirant, conscious of duality above all else, torn, you might say, and pulled hither and thither between the two. I remember a time in my life when I was thinking of a career change. You know, I'd always been interested in medicine of some kind, and I was an opera director. It was very different. And I went through affirmation that I would take this one path or the other, and that was in the morning. By the afternoon, I had completely been pulled in the other direction. I'm not saying that one is higher and one is lower. They're along maybe different rays, but I certainly knew what it was like to be pulled. I couldn't stabilize the tendency to go in one direction or another, and this went on for days, weeks. Finally, it was resolved correctly. I remained an opera director, and that allowed me to begin working in the field again of music and education, which is really where I belonged. as it says at the end of A Treatise on White Magic, Chapter 1, all doors eventually will close except for one. But in between is the wretched aspirant, conscious of duality above all else, just as the mystic is. There's the ordinary life and there's God. And God leads to that wonderful exaltation of the consciousness from the ordinary life to deep disappointment as you fall back into simply being human. I suspect we've all been through this mystical phase, you know. Master DK is not training mystics per se, but he's saying that that mystical life has to lie behind us, the Neptunian life in a way. Some people are very, very highly developed mystics, and maybe they go on the path to Sirius to achieve greater manas. Others more evolve along the mental line. They have the mysticism, but they need still greater sensitivity, and maybe the paths of higher evolution take them away from previous limitations. Okay, his first step has for its objective to make him aware of the pairs of opposites and of necessity to choose between them. Well, when we enter the love petals and we take our right place consciously in the world, we become aware that within ourselves there is that which is higher, the higher power. We didn't know it before, and it intensifies all through that love petal experience, and it keeps on intensifying, only at a certain point the wheel is really reversed, and the inner and higher power is so much more powerful, and we stabilize then in some kind of polarization within the higher power, but not at first. It's a big battle. Through the light which he has discovered in himself, he becomes aware of the dark. You know, this is a veiled reference to the light in the head. Through the good which attracts him, he sees the evil, which is for him the line of least resistance. Good draws evil to the surface in time and space. It's the ninth law, something like that. Let's see if I can find it, because it's such a good one. And here we are. Good, not food. Good, evil, time, space, surface. Yeah, it's going to be all of these three repetitions. It's perfection, isn't it? Perfection calls imperfection to the surface. Good. See, that's what we've just been talking about. Good drives evil always from the form of man in time and space. The method used by the perfect one is that employed by good, and that employed by good is harmlessness. This is not negative, but perfect poise, a completed point of view and divine understanding. Such Libran characteristics, you can understand why the Christ would have a strongly Libran component in his nature. So he sees the evil that he's been involved with before, right? And this is esoteric healing, some page or other, 295, right? Okay, so EH 295. He sees the evil which is for him the line of least resistance. The hidden imperfections are called to the surface by Pluto, which is so active now as humanity is approaching the first initiation. It would be active if any one of us were approaching the first initiation individually. Right. Okay. So going on. Through the activity of pain, he can visualize and become aware of pleasure, and heaven and hell become to him realities. You know, later, an acute form of the hill and valley, a experience, even associated with Aquarius, strangely enough. But when you look at the sign Aquarius, you can certainly, the glyph certainly shows you the ups and downs, doesn't it? Through the activity of the attractive life of the soul, he realizes the attraction of matter and of form, you know, stationing himself in the radiance of a higher form of energy and a higher perspective, he sees the lower and is forced to recognize the urge and pull of both of them. So he is Arjuna. We've all been Arjuna, or the Arjuna experience is upon us, or we will be Arjuna. You know, it is upon us. Okay, do I still want to save? You bet. I want to save. He learns to feel himself as pendant, swinging, you know. The sixth ray does a lot of that. Pendant twixt the two great forces. And once the dualities are grasped, it dawns on him slowly and surely that the deciding factor in the struggle is his divine will in contradistinction to his selfish will. So the nature of will appears and must be used. Now, where does divine will come from? Finally, divine will comes from the monad. If we called it spiritual will, it could come from within the spiritual triad. That is, if we get technical about this. Thus, the dual forces play their part until they are seen as the two great streams of divine energy pulling in opposite directions, and he becomes aware of the two paths mentioned in our rule. Now, if you bind together the two ends of this stick, you find a circle. And which is very interesting because the opposites do meet. And as HBB has told us, spirit is matter at its lowest state of vibration, and matter is spirit at its highest. And soul relates the two and is in an intermediary position. The transformation from spirit to consciousness, soul to matter, who knows how that occurs, but one day we will. One path, oh, he's painting a picture here for us. One path leads back into the dreary land of rebirth. The Makaran crocodile swallows the heart and back you go. And the other leads through the golden gate to the city of free souls. These are evocative words. In Atlantis, maybe there was some kind of a city of the Golden Gate. Even now we have the Golden Gate Bridge. Oh, it's a memory, you know, from ancient times. I'm just thinking about the arches of the company McDonald's. They've even borrowed that somehow. And it's the M of matter, but it's gold, and the great dualities are somehow unified. So one path is therefore involutionary and involves him in deepest matter. Let's just say the members of the Black Lodge are captivated by a great material deva, and it's in a way the mother force, and they cannot find their way free. Okay, retry. Okay, one is therefore involutionary and involves him in deepest matter. The other leads him out of the body nature and makes him eventually aware of his spiritual body. First the egoic lotus, then the vehicles of the spiritual triad, then the monadic vehicle, and on through which he can function, at first in the kingdom of the soul, and then later in the kingdom of planetary lives. One path later on, when he is a true and pledged chela, is known to him as the left-hand path, for reasons which will be increasingly revealed as we begin to understand more about the relationship of the human energy system to the entire vibratory construction of the cosmic physical plane. So one path later on, when he is a true and pledged disciple, let's just say, who knows the terminology, is known to him as the left-hand path, and the other is the path of right activity. See, sometimes you have to simply choose between the pairs of opposites. They're often vertical, and you have to go with the higher. Other times, you have to find the noble middle path, which will allow you to progress and still keep your vehicle without having it destroyed by a spiritual energy. So there are two ways of proceeding. One is simply to choose the higher rather than the lower, and the other is to follow a central path which uses virtues from both sides. One side, the side of form maintenance, the other side, the side of the driving spirit, which can, of course, consume the form and set you back, so it has to be built again. Lives can pass, you may have to rebuild. One path is known to him as the left-hand path, and the other the path of right activity. We, each of us, can say, oh, hey, we're on the path of right activity, and we may well be, but if we take the second degree and we pass into the temptations found in the desert, fitting to our level, we might not pass. We might let the dweller take over. And then, even though we had stood before the initiator two times, we would be taking the left-hand path. So it's good never to assume too much, never to relax into complacency. On one path, he becomes proficient in black magic. Magic, the magic of the form, right? So this is the desires fulfilled magically are desires for the lower form, or the phenomenal worlds, or the very things that Master DK said we had to avoid. Well, the Buddha did anyway, didn't he? Becomes proficient in black magic, which is only the developed powers of the personality subordinated to selfish purposes of a man whose motives are those of self-interest and worldly ambition. Well, that's such a great definition, you know. Somehow it needs to be, emphasized. So this is a great definition of black magic. It's the developed powers of the personality subordinated to the selfish purposes of a man whose motives are those of self-interest and worldly ambition. It's always a problem of mistaken identity. If we knew what we really were, we would not fight so hard for what we are not. These confine him to the three worlds and shut the door, which opens onto life. And so he's trapped in the dense physical vehicle of the cosmic physical plane, the dense physical vehicle of the planetary logos, the lower 18 subplanes, and even from a certain perspective, the lower 21 subplanes. On the other path, he subordinates his personality and exercises the magic of the White Brotherhood, working always in the light of the soul, or in the higher soul, and so forth. Even monad has soul, with the soul in all forms, and laying no emphasis upon the ambitions of the personal self. Now, I'm going to come back to this. This is so good, you know. I'm just going to say this is the end of a treatise on white magic video commentary number 4, rules for the astral plane, and rule 7.4. And then here we're going to have, So this is the beginning. but I'll do it this way. And maybe you regret it, but we'll see. Number 5, rules for the astral plane, and it's going to be 7.5. Okay. All right, friends. I've got these little technical things going on around me, you know. My phone is overly full. It's a Jupiterian affliction. And I have to use a tiny little chronometer, and it's eating the time up, and we're just about to the point where it's going to say, okay, you can end this program. So on we go as we try to understand how we can become true white magicians and use the magic of the soul to bring forward the divine plan, and especially that aspect of the plan, which it is our destiny to bring forward, either soul destiny, which itself is an aspect of the much greater monadic destiny, and which is an aspect of the planetary destiny, and so forth. We have our little part to play, and we have to learn how to play it. Okay, lots of love. We'll see you when I can. All the best. Study hard.